Welcome back to another episode of Women Blazers, the podcast that features conversations with women in the sports industry who are either breaking barriers or on a journey to blaze trails. I'm your host, Deanna Witter, and I am excited to have Amanda Verhoff as our featured guest. Amanda is the president of ALSD, the Association of Luxury Suite Directors, and where she has dedicated her entire career starting out as an intern. She's an authentic and passionate industry leader who plays a significant role in inspiring the innovation of the premium fan experience and has had an incredible ride with a front row seat to the evolution of arenas and stadiums across the country. Now, I had some technical difficulties with my microphone in this episode, but I drew some incredible advice from Amanda when she shares, "Don't let perfection be the enemy of completion." I want to take a moment to thank Turnkey ZRG for supporting Women Blazers. Turnkey ZRG is a top talent search firm in sports, entertainment, and media. We appreciate Turnkey's role in advancing gender equity in our industry. Thank you so much for joining us for Women Blazers. It's been so nice to hear more about your path, what you do, and learn more about you.
Oh, look, I love you. I respect you. You know this. It was an honor just to be asked to be on this. So if we can help young people coming up, Dee, I think our mission was accomplished. But you know how much admiration I have for you. So thank you again so much for the opportunity.
All right, Amanda. You went to the University of Dayton and graduated with a degree in communication. You know, what was that career plan while in college?
First of all, go Flyers. You may not know this, but in 2020, I swear we were going to win the national championship. So Obi Toppin, one of our best players, is now with the Knicks doing big things in the dunk contest as well. So he got lost. Anyway, go Flyers. So, you know, I went to college and certainly I wasn't going to go pro afterwards in soccer. So, yeah, I went to UD and I rode the bench in soccer for 5 years as a goalie. And honestly, I only have myself to blame, which we can get into later, but a career path, I'm putting air quotes so you can't see it. It should be loosely used here because I didn't have one, to be honest with you, Dee. My academic choice for college was based on sports. It's probably not unlike a lot of us in this industry, but I had an offer to play 6 hours away, basketball. And then late in the game, I got the offer to stay close to home and play soccer at UD. And so, you know, the story's been written. I stayed in Dayton and I chose soccer. So career wasn't front of mind. And frankly, neither was soccer. It wasn't my first love. Basketball was. And so, you know, there's a little bit of like, should I have gone? Should I have not? But in college, obviously, I met my husband, stayed close to home and all those things. But anyway, on the career path side, you know, I realized, as a lot of us in this industry, that sports was important to me. And if I wasn't competing on the field, I may as well try my hand in professional sports business. And, you know, I considered in college, like many of us probably do also, recreation, fitness, professional sports, but I didn't really pave my path as maybe as properly as I should have. I wasn't real present during my internships or classes. And I regret that, you know, to this day, but I'm thankful that my path was really paved by happenstance. I was invited to keep warming the bench at UD for a fifth year. And I took that opportunity to start my master's and was offered the first ever graduate assistant position in the sport management department, thanks to my mentor. Yeah, and during that time, you know this, in the sports industry, a lot of guest speakers come to colleges, they tell their story and talk about all the cool, sexy jobs that you can get in sports. And lo and behold, Bill Dorsey walks through the door, the ALSD's legend, in one of the classes that I was monitoring. And he talked all about the cool, slick world of suites and all that, which I had no idea what it was at the time. At the end of his presentation, he was like, "I need a couple interns." And so I was like, "All right, let's make the drive down I-75, meet with them." And as you know, the rest is history. 15 years later, I'm still walking through ALSD's doors, figuratively at this point. But that's how my career path was paved. So good story, right?
Wow. We'll go back for a minute for your like athletic, you know, career in college and how you shaped. I mean, as an athlete going into college, you're picking your college based on obviously the opportunity to play. How did being an athlete sort of shape that mindset of, of where you wanted to be or see yourself? I mean, obviously it consumed you, right, to the point where you didn't have a career idea, but, you know, any advice for any current, you know, student athletes, if they're in college today, and what they should be thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Because as an athlete, one, innately, you're going to be a competitor, right? And so there's probably a lot of roles where your competition, your competitive nature is going to make you a good fit for a role in sports, sometimes in sales, because as competitors, as killers, you know, you might be really good at sales. But as an athlete, you're probably not thinking that at the time, right? But you need to shift your focus as an athlete to think, okay, what is my mentality as an athlete? And how could that push me to the career that makes the most sense in sports? I would say second to that, we know this, you and me, sports is about teamwork. And that's how cultures are developed in at least professional and in college and minor league type of sports organizations too. I can't say the same because I just don't know on recreation or fitness and training and all that stuff. But I do know that in professional sports, culture and drinking the Kool-Aid and all that, it's part of the game. And again, athletes are, it's just an innate competition, teamwork, and work ethic, schedules, routine. And that's going to put you in a position to understand the sports business and have good work ethics going in. But what you have to do again is shift that mentality to, from being an athlete, sure, as a freshman, sophomore, et cetera, you may not really be thinking about career, but shift it, your junior, your senior, your fifth year, whatever it is, to think, okay, this is going to end real soon. That NCAA commercial is so true. Only 2% of us go pro in sports. You know, what are you going to go pro in? And expand that lens. Look at your strength coach, look at your coaches, look at the compliance officer, look at the sponsorship director, look at the luxury suite person at your arena. There are so many avenues you can take, so long as, again, you open your eyes to those that are out there for you.
That's great advice. So you got this incredible internship opportunity while at Dayton, as you mentioned, with ALSD, that launched that 15-year career with the organization. Can you share with the listeners what ALSD is, what it stands for, and then how it serves the industry?
Yeah, for sure, because I didn't know what it was, obviously, back in the day. So ALSD is a mouthful. It's the Association of Luxury Suite Directors. I think the acronym is a bit more apt at this point, though, because what we cover, which I'll get to here momentarily, is much more than just suites. And we have more than just suite directors who attend ALSD. But taking a step back, and pardon me for what might be a long-winded monologue here, but it's sometimes hard to understand what the hell we do without getting into the weeds a little bit. So I learned, obviously, as soon as I walked through the doors of ALSD, that the association covers premium seating. And so that was like a twofold thing to me, because one, what is premium seating? And two, what is an association? And so I had to wrap my head around those two things, because we have to be a bit of jack of all trades as associations, because you have to know how to operate an association at a conference, but you also have to know what content that association is covering. And so again, entering those two things, the association and the premium seating side, explains then who we are. And so backing up 30 years, the association really began when suites and premium seats were just starting to be built in mass in these sports and entertainment venues. There were a couple builds, you know, early on that had skyboxes, but, you know, the 1990s were really the sweet spot, pun intended. The first suites, they were called skyboxes, right? There were these posh spaces, you know, positioned at the top of the venues. And at the time, Bill, who I mentioned before, Bill Dorsey, our founder, published a lifestyle magazine aptly named Skybox to be put in these boxes. You know, however, he soon learned that there was really this niche to be carved out, an education about premium seating, what it was. You know, it needed to be studied and understood, because at the time, you know, there were a handful of quote unquote suite directors, but truly nobody knew quite yet how to hone the skills for sales and service and providing an experience for these premium seating skyboxes, luxury suites, whatever you called them back in the day. Mm-hmm. So ALSD was born. And again, it's an association of like-minded professionals, in this case, suite directors, who get together and learn how to best serve their premium clients and provide these exclusive business and fan networking opportunities within these luxury suite spaces. So fast forward 15 years, when I joined, suites were mainstream at that point, right? Fast forward again to today, you know this because you guys have these types of areas, but it's now suites, loges, ledges, clubs, social viewing decks, like you name it. There are all of these cool new premium experience areas in venues, and we cover it. And so breaking it down to who the constituents are, basically every professional sports team in this country is a member of ALSD and some international as well. We do have an international division, along with colleges, racing, entertainment venues, minor leagues, tennis. Again, you name it, any venue that has premium seating and a premium seating staff or some form of it are members of the association. So we provide 365 educational benefits like a lot of other associations. And then the most fun thing is getting this group together. We hold a large conference in a premier city each year. And, you know, the cool part about this conference is it's a movable feast every year, right? We host it in whichever city really that year or in that, you know, span of 4 or 5 years has the newest or most renovated or brand new shiny toy of sports venues. And so oftentimes it's going to be a large market that's got several sports venues, a lot of them, again, new, renovated, et cetera. And, you know, the thing about conferences is you can sit in a room all day long and talk about it, learn about it, watch panels. But until you can really get inside and experience the education hands-on, you're missing a piece. And so these tours provide people like you and your counterparts the opportunity to get into all these new renovated, et cetera, venues and be like, holy shit, that's what they're doing in their suites and clubs. I can take those ideas back to my venue. And so if attendees have attended for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, they've probably seen 25 of the premier venues in this country, and even more for those that have attended, you know, every single year since we've been in existence, and they've taken those ideas and cues back to their own venues. So that's the conference piece, as you know, and within that conference piece, we also hold the largest premium trade show on the planet. And for those that aren't familiar with what a trade show is, it's exhibits of products and services that can be used in sports entertainment venues. But what's interesting now is like all this new technology that doesn't fit real nicely inside of a 10 by 10 exhibit booth. Man, we need to talk about these technologies and these immersive experiences. And so we've had to kind of pivot, which I can get into later, use that cliche word at this point, how we have started to explain these new products and services and technologies within our association. The last piece is our growth areas, Dee, and that's the area of design and build forum, our sports sales and service training forum, our technology division. See, the thing is about premium, it's almost like blending with the overall fan experience. Yes, we still have to learn how to provide an exclusive experience that's just for premium. But you and I both know that any fan that walks through the door wants something cool, something special, something Instagrammable. And so we started to cover the entire venue landscape, construction, projects, fan experience, sales and service for entry-level people, because we have to. The ecosystem is too intertwined for premium not to lean on all these other divisions within the industry. You know, think about data and analytics and food and beverage and all these other areas. Those could be growth areas for us to cover, whether from near or far, to blend into our overall conference programming. So again, to recap, ALSD, it's year-round membership, education, conference and trade show, and networking. And I'll end on this piece, Dee, because you and I both know that, I'm going to make up a word here. We both know that the ALSD attendees are the best hanger outers in the entire world. I kid you not. I don't know what it is about you people, but I hopefully have learned a little bit of it. You all just know how to network. And when we get you together, people are surprised to understand and know that, like, this is an educational forum, people. It just looks like a big kumbaya, people having a good time. But listen, all these great networkers, they answer the bell in the morning. They're anxious, they're curious, they're learners, but damn, they're good at networking. So that's us.
I mean, we are definitely an entertaining group of individuals, no doubt. And we know how to entertain.
I mean, that's what you do for a living. That's what you provide to your clients is then what, you know, comes on the plane with you to all the ALSD conferences. And you act the same. You never really take that entertaining hat off. So we love it.
No, you can't turn it off for sure. But thank you for walking through just, you know, actions that you guys take to contribute to this industry and move our business forward. And I don't know where we would be from a luxury suite premium, even to the level of where buildings have gone, the experiences that are built is really led through what you guys share. And it's such a such a valuable asset to our industry.
Thank you.
As well. So thank you. Thank you for sharing the details in that as well.
Yeah, you're a big piece of it. You know that. It's my pleasure to work with all of you and learn from all of you. Until we understand your issues, successes, and challenges, we can't cover it as well as we should. So thank you. We hope that we're a necessity to the industry. We appreciate that.
And you also help us create a little bit of competition. Like, we constantly want to go back to your conference and sort of one up. Like, we want to be the ones that are creating the new product and discovering this new opportunity. I think, as you talked about the evolution of the premium products, going from the skyboxes, suites, loges, and now you're in these like coming up with like the new sexiest thing that nobody's ever yep. heard of. And your organization allows us to have that innovative sort of,
you know what's if you don't mind this shameless plug, we do this contest every year because it is a competitive bunch, and I mean that affectionately. We do this contest called Spotlight, and it's essentially you submit for your best suites, clubs, tech, whatever it is, and that's illustrated in an awards competition. And the submissions that we get, like the images that I've seen, are absolutely incredible. But then as one judge called it, he said we've created the Wikipedia of sports venues, because our website is just filled with these galleries of just incredible spaces. So yeah, I mean, it's everybody is, you know, I wouldn't say one-upping each other, but it's just keeping up with one another, because there are all these new cool products. And I mean, hell, I think it was the Suns the other day just unveiled like the biggest bar in sports history that I think just took over the San Jose Soccer Club out there. They used to have the biggest bar. So it's things like that. It's fun. You know, it's a fun, you know, jab at one another to try to one-up.
So since the internship back in 2007, you earned more experience and trust, which actually led to your career growth, serving as a director of events, membership services for 14 years, which then led to you being named as the president 3 years ago. You know, what are your main responsibilities in your role, and in how would you describe the structure environment of the organization?
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I'll take a step back. And even though you didn't directly ask it, I'll kind of tell you how I got where I am now. Because again, I wouldn't repeat the word happenstance, but it's similar. It's a trust thing, to use your word, right? Yeah. Like, a lot of us, I shouldn't say a lot of us, I'll speak for myself here. I didn't set out to get a slicker title every year or add more responsibilities every year. What I did was try to learn the business, put in my best effort, please people, learn to understand networking, and always aim to please and understand the ALSD community day in and day out. And so I would imagine that it wasn't just based on experiences that have led me to get that slicker title every year. It's just being honest, being trustworthy, caring about people and the sports industry. And in this surprise and delight industry, like, just try to emulate what you want for your constituents in your own role. And so that's, I guess, what I try to do. And people pleaser is probably my downfall at some point, but that's just what I try to do. And I think Bill probably appreciates that. And it doesn't hurt to have somebody who gives a shit about the business be the one to be one of the co-leaders of it. So anyway, the long and short of my responsibilities, it's, you know, based around those pillars I explained earlier. So the planning and facilitation of the conference is obviously one of the big things that I do and we do. And without getting too deep into the weeds, it's the programming, the education, speaking sessions, trade show activation, sponsor activation, attendee registration, and so forth. You know, the other cool thing, though, are all these growth areas that I told you about. The design and build forum, the training forums, the tech committee, all those areas need fed and watered. And so we all have to, you know, put on different hats and look at these different groups just about every day in some way, calls, meetings, you know, whatever it is. We have to see, okay, we're not just growing for growth's sake alone. We're growing because, as I mentioned, this ecosystem of the sports experience is just so intertwined. And so I love looking at the growth areas for the ALSD and for the reasons that I just explained. The other piece is the delivery of content. And while I am not, you know, the publisher, Jared is, of course, we all lean in and provide content however we can for the ALSD. Again, that's one of the reasons we exist, is to be a clearinghouse of information. So whereas we did a magazine for 30 years, we now are doing a lot more digital content, digital research, moderating panels, doing, you know, research from afar, and providing content in our digital outlets. I assist with that however possible. And then, as I mentioned before, the selection for cities to host the ALSD conference, I won't lie, that's really fun. I get to travel with, usually with Bill and the rest of our staff, to these sweet cities and get put up in really nice hotels that at the end of the day want the conference business. So it's an awesome, you know, few days in a potential host city where kind of the climax of it all is meeting with our clients who, you know, hopefully we get a chance to tour their buildings while we're there. So that part doesn't suck, that's for sure. No, it doesn't at all. So the last piece is something that I, you know, hold near and dear to my heart because of my beginnings. I love leading our interns at the conference. You know, as a former UD student and an intern myself, a real joy is inviting UD sport management students and certainly those from some other schools too to work at our event. You know, they immerse ourselves in what we do. They learn that, again, those two areas that I highlighted before, one, an association and an event, and two, premium seating. They get to learn so early on what those things are, and they get to meet people like you and your staff. And so that's one of the things that, again, I hold near and dear to my heart in terms of responsibilities. So hopefully that answers your question.
So sure. How big is the team that runs all this? I mean, because I can only imagine like you running around doing all of these things and leading these programs and site visits, you know, how many people support, you know, all the layers of what you guys do?
Well, you gotta wear comfortable shoes. That's for sure. Because we are lean and mean and you gotta be running everywhere you go, you know, travel, conferences, site visits, et cetera. But yeah, we're lean. You can count on one hand, the people who are internal, but then you gotta consider the other constituents that help year round. We don't plan a conference on an island. We lean on a board of advisors. We lean on, you know, friends of the industry. We lean on our vendor supplier partners. And so, yeah, while our staff is relatively small, because we're a national, international type of association, we rely on the boots on the ground, which are people like yourself. And we're thankful mm-hmm. to do so because, as you point out, we couldn't do this alone with the lean and mean staff that we have.
Yeah, it gives me a lot more respect knowing how lean you guys are, just the vast in the work and what you produce every year, again, for all of us at the team level and across this industry. So kudos to you and your team, and thank you.
That's made up of you guys. Just know that too. We work on your behalf, but we couldn't do it without all of you.
Your business, as you mentioned, you know, it's heavily on this conference and getting face to face with the members so you can serve them properly. And this past year, we were all grounded, right, and all impacted by this pandemic. But and obviously the events industry also got hit significantly. So how did the ALSD respond to those challenges and innovate to serve your members?
Listen, we were literally grounded. I haven't been on a plane in over a year, which wow. for me is unheard of. Growing up as an airline brat, my mom worked for, I don't know if I can use that term properly, but my mom worked for the airlines. So I was on a plane my whole childhood, and then soccer, traveling through that. And then this job, she's being not on a plane for a year has been both a blessing and a curse, because I want to go somewhere, for God's sakes. But anyway, yeah, we sure were grounded. You know, and I think it made us understand even more one of our mottos, which is that content is king or queen, if you like. And we had to understand that with, you know, the ability to cover the industry, you know, we could only do so by understanding what our members were going through personally and professionally. You know, until we understood the issues, we weren't in a position to try to help find solutions. And so we had to still get, quote unquote, face to face, but in a different way with our members and the teams and the vendors and suppliers, because everybody was impacted differently. But, you know, what the pandemic allowed us to do was to get more face to face. I don't know about you, but I've had more on camera calls than I've ever had in my entire life, you know, built into this year. And so we did still get in front of them, albeit with our feet on the ground and not on planes. But, you know, the education is a crucial piece of ALSD's existence. And so we just had to do more for our members from afar. So enter the virtual world, as you know, more panels, roundtables. And you know this, we did a full-blown conference virtually out of necessity. Yes, our group, it was lacking perhaps in the face-to-face networking that we talked about earlier. But where the silver lining was, people could lean in more to the content, which at this point in the game was needed. You know, we, ALSD ourselves, met an incredible number of experts, you know, with information about the pandemic and opening up facilities. I've never talked to more scientists and safety experts and even facility operators than we did this year. And so it allowed us to create that content that our members so needed at this point. And again, we wouldn't have met those people. And had the ability, an opportunity, without being insensitive here, to provide that to our members. And so the content shifted, but we were still able to understand the pain points and again, provide some education about them. But you know, the other piece that while we were all figuring out how to reopen our buildings and things like that, our premium seating niche had to figure out how to best satisfy their clients. They had to talk about contracts and rollovers and future fan engagement. And hey, you know, if this continues for another year, all the what ifs. And so they were dealt, you know, a really weird hand this year. So it's still a really fluid conversation that we're covering, you know, but, you know, it also allowed us, again, if there's silver linings in this, like we did a couple cool things. We did a virtual sports sales and service training forum and activated a ton of really awesome trainers. And, you know, they did 40-minute sessions and we complimented them with team panels. And so the education was not lacking during the pandemic. It's just being done differently. And, you know, it all goes well. We get back in person later this year. But it just made it just opened our eyes to the possibilities and really intuitive nature of virtual and content. And that's not going to go away. So if there's one thing that was added to the business this year, it's that understanding that we can still do business from afar.
Point, they're not going to go away. And I think we're going to continue to see them throughout our industry. So I think ultimately, to your point, it just unlocked new opportunities for you guys to reach out and contribute and provide resources to your members and across the industry. I think that's fantastic. Going back, so now we've layered in like just the vastness of your role, you know, how much your organization contributes and delivers for the members and for the industry. You went through a pandemic this year and had to really shift with a lean team and deliver again, for your members in a way that you've never had to deliver before. You know, you have, man, in your position, you know, in this space, like, I can't imagine, you know, sort of the amount of stress and, you know, just ensuring that, you know, you're delivering on everything. And, you know, just curious, like, how do you handle the anxiety and the stresses of the role?
Look, the stress is real. And you know this, my role isn't much, you know, any more complex than anybody else in this industry. Our mind, to be honest, it plays us like fiddle sometimes. It's incumbent on us as perfectionists, which many in this industry are, to find peace, to find some way to de-stress. And that's not easy to do. As perfectionists and those who, speaking for myself here, are people pleasers to an extent that sometimes it's a detriment to us. We have to be really mindful of, okay, let down your guard. Don't let perfection be the enemy of completion. And be mindful that while you care as passionately as you do, your stressors may not be front of mind for anybody else. So you kind of need to let them go. Now, that's easier said than done. And I will say this, I deal with anxiety and have since college. It's been an ebb and flow. And sometimes it's worse. And in the past 3 years, not just based on the pandemic, but it got to the point where I couldn't go without medication. And I'm bringing this issue to light because I don't think that it's taboo to talk about mental health anymore. We all have a lot of stressors in our life. And I think that mental health needs to take a front seat in a lot of our discussions now. So for me, you know, I tried to run, to read, to cook, to have a cocktail. But, you know, there were some points for me that were deep and dark. And I thought to myself, okay, I don't want to have to rely on a medication. I want to win against anxiety by myself. I don't want to rely on a drug. Okay. But I was met with a paralyzing anxiety because I honestly, like, without sounding flippant about it, I think I cared too much, to be honest, but it brought me down. It was my detriment, my self-inflicted, you know, punishment was caring too much. And it wrapped me up to the point where I said, I got to go to the doctor. I got to get healthy. And so even though, you know, in my mind, I was losing and having to medicate to make my mind right, it was me winning for my health. And so it's funny, I was talking to one of my counterparts about this, not in ALSD, but another industry friend. Mm-hmm. And she said it best. She said, Zoloft is just your brain chemistry coach. And I was like, that is brilliant. It is okay.
That is brilliant.
It's okay to have a coach. It truly is. And so it's not as if like a medication or a therapist or however you deal with stress, you're not losing. That's how you're winning. Your coach is getting you back to winning. So that's how I'll look at it. And I know that that's maybe a little bit vaguer than getting, you know, real industry specific here, but I want to bring that to light and let people know that this issue is real and it can be talked about.
Yes. No, thank you. I think it's important to your point to bring it to light. And I greatly appreciate you for sharing your story and how you've handled it. And then just your openness that, you know, it's okay. You know, if you need to seek help, seek a coach, you know, as you described it, I think that's fantastic. And, you know, the more we talk about it, the more we bring it to light, the more normal it will be and help other people start to just meet the truth of the situation to go and find that coach that helps them.
Absolutely.
You know, you also, you know, in your role, you have such a unique opportunity to experience and observe the industry from a different perspective than someone like me at a team, right? So, you know, from your vantage point, you know, what have you seen in terms of women's growth in premium and suite leadership positions? And, you know, what do you think contributes to the lack of representation in the suite and premium spaces?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, premium is, in terms of all roles, so sales, service, all leadership, anywhere from VP, director, manager, coordinator, premium is really equally split in terms of male, female. Now, there is still a bit more, I guess I would say male saturation that exists still in sales, and many women are still in service from what we've seen.
Correct.
I see that paradigm shifting. Is that how you see it too, though? There are still more men in sales and women in service.
Yes, absolutely. I was going to say, you know, when you talk about premium, it seems like most time there's a male leader of the sales mm-hmm. perspective, and there's a female, you know, or woman, you know, leading up the service aspect of it. And most of the service team is majority built up of women as well. So it's sort of, you got the gatherers and the hunters.
Well, that's exactly how I would describe it too. But I think that, and this is surely based on my opinion only, but I think women have the ability to take ego out of sales. Now, that's not to say that men cannot, but women have, I think they're innately more mindful not to overpromise and underdeliver. Right. So the blending of service within sales is more present now than ever. Look at renewal business. Who's doing the renewal mm-hmm. business? Well, that's going to come from the service side. And so sales and service are so much more blended now. And there is no more like naivete from the client side either. They want transparency. They want ROI. They know what it takes to achieve value out of, you know, their purchase. And they want good service. To purchase premium is to purchase the experience and good service, right? Well, we can both provide that. The sales and the service providers can both provide that, agnostic of gender. It's just now a blending of those roles, which I think is a great paradigm shift that is happening. And I do think we will see probably more women get into sales roles again, because there's that underpinning and premium of service within sales. So hopefully that made sense. But I would agree with you in terms of leadership that, you know, I don't pretend to know why disparities still exist, male to female leadership, but I do think it's changing. The thing that, and again, this is my opinion only, but my thought is that sports is too unique of an industry to look at and ask why those disparities exist. They exist, I think, because the revenue sports are still male dominated. And so sometimes in the back of people's mind, people probably think, well, males on the court, on the field, court, whatever, then it also should be males in the front office, or males in the coaching roles, or males in name it, you know? So I think that that's maybe just like, an unconscious type of thing that you don't even think about. But I also think that's changing. Look at all the women coaches that are now, you know, rising in the ranks. That's really cool to see. But I do think you're right that there are still disparities. And I will say that there's one area that we study that we have seen those disparities besides leadership. And that's in the facilities and operations and construction roles. And we actually initiated something called Females in Facilities last year as a layer to our design and build forum, because we saw those disparities, that a lot of that forum was made up of men. And again, for better or worse, whatever. But the desire of females in facilities was allyship and learning, okay, here's my small tribe of women in these particular roles. Again, construction, special projects, even architecture roles, and those really high facility operations roles. Few women, but we've created this allyship to talk about your challenges, your successes, your mentorships, and your future goals, right? So I think it's really important, as you point out, to really see either the disparities or the equity or whatever it is, and then lean in on how to make that a little bit more palatable, right? And create a group and look at DEI now. We're looking at that to figure out, okay, it might be idealistic at this point, but how do we get to that point where we all want to see, based on character and credentials, agnostic of gender, like that's who should be leading, right? Like that's where I think we all want to get, but we're not there yet. And so we still have to lean into to groups that there might be disparities within.
Now for your professional growth, when you think about, you know, where you are, you know, how important was it to have mentors and supporters, and what's something meaningful you learned from them?
Yeah, I've got three things come to mind, and they're not chronological by any means, but I think they're going to weave themselves together in a way that you'll understand. But the first one, I was having dinner with Jennifer Ark from the Green Bay Packers. I don't know if you know her, but she was our board of advisors president many years ago, outstanding individual and human being. And sitting at dinner, this was before I had kids. And she had kids at the time. And she said, do you want kids? And I said, yeah, eventually I do. And she said something that in the context of the conversation was about family and things, but it has stuck with me now in every facet of my life moving forward. And she just looked at me and she said, and I'll put in the quotations, when you have a family, her words were, be present. And that's a real simple thing to hear, but a very hard one to actually execute. And that's so true now in our world where you can't disconnect from work or internet or whatever it is, but be present. And she meant it at the time, again, based on family, but that's true with any experience that you're in, be present. And that's what I wasn't early in my life. I truly was not present in my own life till I turned about 30, you know, and you gotta really pay attention to the experiences that you're having, because they're gonna set you up in the future. For my number two point, my next mentor, Dr. Teitelbaum at the University of Dayton, he was my professor early on and has since become a friend. I still help out at UD. He was an adjunct professor there for a while. And he asked me something the other day that I wish, he probably did ask me this earlier on. I wasn't paying attention, what wasn't being present, but he asked me a couple weeks ago, and pardon my language here, but he said, you need to write down, what do you give a shit about? And I was like, man, that makes so much sense. If we would only sit down and really ask ourselves, what do I give a shit about? Well, once you do, then you know where your career should go. But you can't know what you give a shit about until you're present in the things that you're experiencing. So, you know, for me, like, do I care about running, cooking, food, whatever? I care about food and cooking. Why didn't I before look into culinary school? Why didn't I look into working at a food bank? You know, if I care about sports, well, why am I not looking at all the different areas that you and I talked about before? If you are competitive, if you love the kill, look at sales, you know? So all these, like, what do you give a shit about? Like, literally write that down. Write down the 10 things you care about, and that will lead to what you can be passionate about in your career. So it's just like, these are like no-brainers. It's totally logical. Right. Those two definitely stick out. And I think the one that I want to end this question on, because this is, you know, Women Blazers and so on and so forth, is such an incredible conversation to have with you and to amplify the voices of women. My mom said something to me the other day that it just made me feel all warm and fuzzy. And I don't know about you, but as a woman, I often and for a long time have felt resentful for being a woman. Our lives are a little bit harder. We're not in their leadership roles yet. You know, it's woe is me type thing. And I needed some way to get out of that, right? And I'm not there yet, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But she said something and it spoke to me. She said, and I want to make sure I don't misquote it, but it was in a text. She said, as a woman, and she didn't say as a woman. We were talking about something totally different. Yeah. She said, you do what you have to do, but with love. Like, how poignant of a message is that? And that goes back to, like, the service role. As women, we fucking do what we have to do, but man, we do it with compassion and people in mind and the care and the feeding and the nurturing, don't we? Like, that just spoke to me, like, okay, Amanda, let your resentment go. Do what you have to do, but do it with love, because that's who we are at the end of the day. And that is enough, you know?
Man, that's beautiful.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. That's fantastic. I love that. I mean, obviously your mentors and the people in your life have just fed you. You know, somebody was saying, like, you know, you want people in your life that fill your cup up, you know, and you clearly have that and surrounded in your life. And man, what great learnings from your community and your tribe. And I love the, you know, what do you give a shit about list? I'm going to make mine now from here.
You have to, yeah.
Yes. And yes, what your mom said, and just to your point, you know, what we as women, you know, we have this ability to tap into something with passion and love. And we bring that in everything.
Damn
we
right.
do. In every interaction. And I think that's, that's sort of our superpower. Mm. And so to your point, as we look at the things that we find as challenges or maybe barriers, you know, we can erase all of that, knowing that we have this superpower.
You're so right. I love that you frame it in that way.
Now, you've mentioned, and we brought it up now a couple of times, that, you know, you are a mother and you're a wife, and you got this crazy, you know, busy, you know, stressful job. You know, how do you structure, manage your lifestyle in a more in a more traditional year that's not a pandemic, you know, when you're traveling and you have, you know, a number of things on your plate that you're managing? How do you structure that lifestyle so it works for you and your husband and your kids?
Well, I buy my kids a whole lot of shit when I'm on the road. I'll tell you that. Mommy doesn't come home with presents and mommy doesn't get to come through the door. So there's that. They have become accustomed to having snow globes and t-shirts and socks from all these different cities that I have come home from.
Funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, they get it. Our kids are resilient, first of all, but they grew up with me traveling, right? So it's not a surprise to them. For my husband, though, it's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's a challenge, because he is the most incredible human being, smartest person I've ever met. And he challenges me like no other, but anyway, story for a different day. But anyway, he's in schools. And so he has a lot of extracurriculars himself. And so he has to prioritize when I leave. He just has to take meetings, you know, off calendars or change them to different times, but he does it incredibly well. And the thing that I have to say, when you go away, and maybe women do this more than men, we need to let go of control. We don't need to pack their lunches and make lists and all that. The kids are going to be fine. Like your husband, wife, partner, spouse, whatever, also had that kid, those kids, and they will be fine. They are loved. And so easing up on the control a little bit would be, a form of recommendation that I have for other parents when they leave. The kids will be fine. Make your list if it makes you feel better, but walk out the door and go do what you do, especially if your kids already know. But you know this, the other thing is too, you got to have a tribe. You mentioned it before. And, you know, there's my family, obviously, besides my husband, my family is close by. My parents are a mile away. My sister's family, they're 2 miles away. They always help. And then Steve's parents from Cleveland, they come down when, you know, if the trips are going to be longer or Steve takes them up there. Yeah, it's all about having that tribe. I don't know how people do it without support systems. You know, you got to have whoever it is that's going to be helping out on your side. That's for sure. So, and you know, it's funny. I don't know if you've thought about this yet, but I'd love to take my kids on trips with me when they get to the age where I can leave them in a hotel room safely by themselves, or take them on a, you know, a meeting with me. My mom did that for me. I remember sitting at a hotel in Palm Springs reading a book while she was at her meetings, and it was the best experience ever. You know, Paige Farragut from the Rangers, she takes her boys on trips. So I don't know about you, but that's what I'm looking forward to, is my kids are old enough to experience this with me, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm the same. I look forward to taking my kids on trips. And, you know, I never saw parents take their kids or integrate their kids until I was at the Cavs. And one of my favorite observations that I got was when our team president, Carrie Buchholz, flew into All-Star Weekend. And he said every year he took his daughters with them, and they go off and they do like their own thing and meet up. And I'm like, that is amazing. Yeah. Like, I can't wait, you know, to be at a conference so my kids can like come and go off and
bring them to ALSD. My kids have been to ALSD. They can totally come to ALSD any year. They'll have friends in my family.
They can hang out together. No, but it's true. We've done trips where, you know, a business trip, and then my husband will come with the kids, and, you know, we hang out or stay longer or get there earlier. But you're, to your point, it was just the kids and you. Like, how cool and fun will that be? But you're right. I mean, the tribe is big, and it's one of those things. I love that you said this, because it just works, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, your kids grew up in an environment where their mom travels, and, you know, your parents work, and like, that's their experience. Like, I'm not trying to create this cookie cutter, you know, what I see in TV lifestyle for my kids. I want them to grow up in an environment where they know, like, this is what mom does, this is what dad does, and it's going to be their experience, you know? And I think at the end of the day, they're going to be better off, you know, not having sort of like a manufactured life.
Yeah, I would agree. A manufactured life. I like that.
You know, what is something you've learned that you wish you knew at the beginning of your career that you know now?
Yeah. People skills and energy matter. And I was told this, and I don't know if it came as a surprise necessarily to me, but some people get off the phone with me or have a follow-up call, and they're like, man, I've worked with X number of associations, and you just have a whole lot more energy than, and so much energy, and I love your passion, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, do people not do people come to calls and things like not happy or energized? Well, yeah, probably they do. But it, to me, it was like, okay, if that can be my hallmark, I'm not going to inauthentically have energy, but if that can set me ahead, that sounds so bad to say, but the energy is what you can bring naturally, right? And so I don't know, again, how you go about your day without energy. So that's the first thing. The other thing, as I mentioned before, is the people skills. Man, I never learned how to cocktail in high school or college. So I never learned like networking skills. You can learn networking skills so many other places than just, you know, in a work setting. Go to a party, read a book, go to the library, like learn how to talk to adults, you know, just things like that. You pick up on people skills, and people skills come from experience too. And so that whole being present thing, I wasn't present enough to get enough experiences to be confident and intelligent enough to talk about stuff. So those are the things that I would say, you know, pick up early on is energy, passion, and people skills.
To close it up here, what advice do you have for our listeners who are looking to grow their careers in this industry?
Yeah, so I'm going to take a page out of my dad's book. He was in schools for many, many years, but one of his roles was interviews there for a while. And he used a line before he interviewed candidates to make them feel at ease. He said, I want to interview the person, not the interviewee, meaning don't be that statue of a figure, be your authentic self. Now, I know that word is a bit cliche and overused at this point, but you in an interview can't come with these crisp answers and this perfect, what did you call it before, this manufactured life. Don't come with that. Put yourself at ease, tell a joke, make yourself comfortable in an interview, and understand that the employer on the other side wants to talk to the person, not that stiff interviewee. The other thing that I would say is that a lot of, and pardon me if this sounds harsh, but I mean this from my heart, a lot of interviewees, young ones, come into an interview and say, I want this internship or whatever job for my growth, because I really think I can learn a lot here. Hey, guess what? That employer doesn't give a shit about your growth. They care about their bottom line. They care about their revenue. And so flip it to where I bring you what you need, employer X, instead of I want this role because it's going to make me grow. Now, as a student, that's a hard balance to really achieve, because you do, as a student, still want to learn, immerse yourself, experience. But at the end of the day, again, an employer wants value from you. That's the cold hard truth. Don't come in and say you want growth out of this. Tell them how you can make them money.
Ultimately, your contributions that you'll make to the organization, to your point, the value you'll bring to them in return is going to invest right back.
100%. And that's how they can reframe it. You're exactly right. And so it's just, it's allowing them to understand how to frame it, how to position it to a, you know, potential employer. I think you said it more eloquently than I did.
Listen, if you're contributing, believe me, like what you put into an organization, they're going to invest that much more back into you, because if they invest more into you, then you're going to be able to even provide even more value to the organization. And that's when you get growth opportunities and sort of your path continues to hopefully extend from there.
And that's a wrap on episode 22. Thank you to Amanda for sharing her experiences and opening up to all of us today. As a thank you, our friends at Turnkey ZRG have purchased a one-year membership for her to join the Pro Sports Assembly, an industry member-led association helping advance equity in pro sports. I invite you to follow us on Instagram at Women Blazers to stay connected with the Women Blazers Network. And look forward to episode 23 featuring Abby Mathis, Senior Director of Premium Hospitality Development for the Cleveland Cavaliers of the NBA. Until next time, have a wonderful week.